part of the Press Play Podcast Network.
Gentlemen across the nation, I have an urgent message for you. This episode is brought to you by Manscaped. The brand that took your balls to space is now launching them into the ultrasphere. Introducing the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra, featuring a new cutting-edge design and next-generation dual skin-safe blade heads for different shaves.
It's pretty much a spaceship to take your boys downstairs to the next level. Join the 9 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped with the brand new Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra. Just go to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code PRESSPLAY. High tech for low places. Manscaped.
Saturday in the basement, I think it was the 11th of May.
Why is this happening?
Because Chicago deserves more credit than they get. This is the Ball Card Show, the sports podcast.
For the sports collector.
I'm Jason Otero.
I'm Gary LeMaster.
And as always, we are brought to you by the Press
Play
Podcast
Network.
250624.
I don't like it.
250624.
It doesn't matter how much you point at me. I'm not singing the song. You weren't lying about there being a lot of vodka in that cup, were you?
I was lying. It's Gatorade. But I just wanted to see. I wanted to test you.
Yeah, I don't want to take that test.
I'm kidding. There's vodka in there.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go. We got a little bit to talk about today.
Do we?
Yeah. All right. A little bit. Well, let's start off. First off, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages. That includes everybody.
Got you.
Give both of us a round of applause right now. I wish I had a button to click where it's like, yeah.
Why are we?
Gary and I finally, after months, have both sold our challenge cards.
Oh, we did.
And made some moves on the 5K challenge. We'll update you on that. We were out at the Pittsburgh show. A lot of foot traffic, a lot of business between the two of us. And
a lot of foot traffic.
Oh, is it going to be like that tonight?
It is. That was too easy. Go ahead. Sorry, it was a lot of foot traffic.
All right, Shoeless Joe Jackson. What are those? What are these?
These are the Steph Currys.
Yeah, but where's the laces on them?
I don't wear the laces in them.
Guys, just because a shoe does not need laces does not mean that you do not wear them.
Oh, it does for me.
You look like you're wearing swim shoes right
don't
now.
Don't care. They're super comfortable.
That is the first honest thing I've heard.
I was
walking around
Xenia at the show today, and I needed something comfortable that wasn't going to wreck my back and my feet.
We're going to fight today. We're going to fight today.
Oh, shoot.
But both of us moved a lot. We had a lot of foot track. What did I say? Track-fic?
Yeah.
Track-fic. In the Washington, PA show, we're going to break down that a little bit. Bowman has released. Gary and I have both opened some. He's opened more than I have. We have some thoughts. Bowman is the only product that sucks me back into breaks every year.
I will occasionally grab a player break if it's cheap, or just a random like single jumbo box. Like I've got the Reds in a break that should happen at some point today in a small room that's always cheap. I got the Reds for like $25 in a jumbo box. So take a run at Pete Rose.
Yep. And then we had a few exchanges at the show. We're going to kind of talk through as
well.
So let's kick this thing off. First off, let's start out with the 5K challenge. So if you have not been following us, I'll give you the rundown here. Gary and I both at the beginning of the year started with $100, and we said if we buy and sell and flip one card over and over and over, can one of us get to 5K by the end of 2024? And so far we are not on pace.
We were moving along, and then a 7-week just stall happened.
Well, what happened was we got into cards that weren't $150.
Well, we got into cards that, like you've said a few times, we got a little too smart for our britches. We grabbed some niche stuff that looked really good that we thought would move fast, and we found out that it wouldn't.
I had two sales in a week on this challenge.
You did. You
to
had
close
to,
the gap a little bit.
Yeah, you cashed out your Arenado for what you paid for it.
Yep.
That's fine. And then you picked up that,
Triple
Threads.
Yeah, Larry Bird.
Sold it for what?
Four. It was with a bundle, but I had to work that price.
Yeah.
Could have lied and said five. I probably could have gotten five. I probably should have waited a little bit
longer. I could have done the same thing, though, because I sold my TJ Watt in a display for $625, but the display was $125. Yeah. So
we are at 4 and 5. We're in a good spot.
Yeah.
We're in a good spot on this. TJ Watt has sold, and I'm just strategizing now what kind of play makes sense. I almost made a move on a card that probably would have been a mistake. Let me talk you through it.
Okay.
So I was looking over the weekend, went to my local card shops. One of them is particularly a wax one, not just a wax, but if there is a massive pull in the Midwest out of an LCS, there's a good chance it came out of this one in Ohio.
Yeah,
out of
Triple Play.
Triple Play in Westerville. They have had a high amount of allocations. They always have tons of wax. They have some really cool vintage retro, I guess retro would be a word. It's not technically a hobby word, but like late 90s, early 2000s wax as well. They've grown a ton, but they don't put a lot of singles out.
Early modern.
Early modern
is the term.
Retro, thank you. They had one of the star rookie Jordans. It was the insert. It was like the best of. That card comps all over the place. There'd be like one comp at 400, one at 800, one at 7, one at...
Who was it again?
It was a Michael Jordan. The okay. Star 86, best of, oh, like it's yeah. An insert set in that. I remembered from my minimal Jordan research that the Star set had a lot of issues. PSA didn't even want to grade that set.
Forever.
Forever.
For like a decade.
Because they kept making the card for years and years and years. I think it may have graded a 7 or an 8. So probably would be selling it raw. They had 500 on it. I tried to think about making a play at 4, and then I just decided against it because I learned from Nolan Arenado. If you're not sure, it's not the card.
Right.
It's not the card. So I passed on that. So I'm on the prowl. I'm looking around. A couple different strategies. Thinking either I would probably stay away from modern unless it's like stupid margins. I might go with a vintage baseball if I can get it at the right margin. Or go back to like a Jordan, LeBron, something like that. Super highly collectible. A big hobby favorite. Let me think through, like, you know, your Shohei's or your, you know, big players.
Yeah.
Right now. So, but I'm not going to just jump at something. The most fun part of selling is now I have to buy again.
Right.
But I think taking a breather here and taking a look. So
I tried to find my next card today. So I was at Xenia, which is one of the biggest monthly shows in the Midwest. It's usually 250 to 300 tables, depending on the month. And I walked that whole show. I got there at about 8:30 and left at about 3. And I think I only saw maybe 10 or 15 cards that were even sticker priced at $500 to $600. Like showcases were just full of $20 to $60 cards. It was weird. Like, which, I mean, we saw it, we'll talk about it, the Washington show here in a little while, but that price range is challenging. People who have some stuff with a sticker there, it's actually a $300 card, and they've got a $500 sticker on it. So you're just, like, stuck. Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So that's the challenge right now. I'm guessing I'll probably have to buy something on Facebook. That'll be the play for
the headache of the back and forth and the digging and the,
yep,
it can be a little bit much. But this is what we signed up for. A reminder to you, the winner keeps their card. The loser has to either sell their card and give 25% of the sale, or just keep the card and give 25% of the value of the card. So at this point, we're both up.
Yeah.
At this point, we're both up.
If the contest ended today, you'd owe me $100.
Yep. That's boring. You all want it to be like a thousand.
No, we're
going We're
going to get there. It's just finding the right thing. And again,
I guess the third option would be if you love my card, you get it at 75%.
That's also an option too.
Which is a little high on that end, but if we're talking a $2,000 card at that point, $5,000.
No, yeah, for sure. That's a different ballgame. But yeah, it again, for me, the goal is to find something that is, I don't even want to use the word liquid. I want to find something that other people want, not just something that I think is cool.
Here's kind of the terminology I've been using. Is this a dealer's card or is this a collector's card?
Right.
That's the big thing. I think that's one of the, so let's get a little bit into what's happening in the hobby right now. I think you have two spaces, two primary spaces for buyers. And the first one is probably majority that I've dealt with. You have just the pure collectors, and then you have the dealers. I said that backwards. I think the dealer is probably who I get the most interest from because they're looking for inventory. They're looking for it at a margin. The collector wants something special.
And I would break dealer down into two groups as well. There is the actual dealer who is somebody like me and to an extent you now as you're getting more and more into it, who actually puts 15 to 30 hours a week of work into this, who sets
that
up.
That felt like a little bit of a dig. No. I just wanted, no, like it felt like just a little bit, just
it
like.
It wasn't.
A, okay.
It wasn't. Don't be sensitive. Just,
for those of you listening, that did hurt my feelings.
Yeah, don't be sensitive. But
I do have feelings. You don't. I do.
I don't. That are putting in the work, that are setting up at 40 plus shows a year, like I do, that are pricing all their cards. Those are dealers. I think that's probably about 20%, maybe 25% of the people who walk up to my table. Another 50% of people who walk up to my table are what I call flippers.
That's fair.
They're not actually dealers. They're just guys who go to card shows, try to buy stuff as cheap as they can, and then throw it on eBay or throw it in a Facebook group and try to make 10 bucks on it.
Or upgrade their trade bait.
Yeah. It's the same guys who go stand at Walmart and wait for the restock girl to come and buy all of it. It's the same guys. And then you got 25% who are actual collectors. Yeah. And of course, those are the people we love to deal with because if you have what they want, they're going to buy it.
The other relief for you as a dealer is it's slow and steady wins the race. So rather than flipping $350 cards at a smaller margin, you just sit on that card that's worth $250 knowing that within the next 3 months, somebody loves Nolan Ryan. They're going to come through and they're going to pick up that Nolan Ryan off.
Yeah.
Because it's a unique card.
Yeah. And if you're in an actual dealer, and again, there are guys who set up at shows that I wouldn't necessarily call actual dealers because they are desperately trying to pay their breaking bills that are on their credit cards.
Big difference, yeah.
And I think the key differentiator is if I have a card that I know is eventually going to sell to a collector, I'm not giving it away to somebody at 80%. Mm-hmm. I don't need to. I don't need the cash. This isn't what I pay my bills with. Like, it's no need to do that. Whereas other guys, it's the exact opposite. Like, I know it's worth 100, but you're going to give me 60 cash right now? Okay, I'll take it. I'll take it right now. How fast can you get it out of your wallet?
Yeah, yeah. So when we're selling to these, so let's just jump into the PA show. We drove out Friday night, Washington, PA. First off, promotion was talking about a couple things. I'm not trying to be critical. I'm just trying to paint a clear picture of what we experienced. It was a net positive for both of us.
Oh, it was fantastic. Yeah.
As we were coming out to the show, we were told a couple things. So, talk about the hotel room and then the expectation of foot traffic.
Yeah. So in February, this show happened and the promoters let everybody know that they had, and they just like anybody else, when they have a big event, they have hotel codes at the nice hotels, and they had like 26 or 2,700 rooms booked back in February. And there were probably 15 to 16,000 people that came through that show in February, especially Saturday was like balls to the wall, insane, five people deep at all times. You couldn't breathe. Like, you couldn't just...
In February. Just, no,
that was February. Yeah. And then this show, the promoters were like, we've booked over 5,000 hotel rooms, like, and double the hotel rooms. They're intimating. They didn't say outright, but they're intimating, we're expecting about double the traffic. Mm-hmm. It was probably 70% of the traffic that was there in February. Yeah. But I also did twice as much in sales.
Yeah, I exceeded my goal for the show. I'll just be transparent with you. Y'all know I'm kind of getting into it. I was thinking if I did 2,500 to $3,000 at my table, I'd be happy with that over a weekend. I think it ended up doing like 37. So it was great. I was able to buy several cards that I was able to keep. And this was one of the shows where there was enough traffic where you were buying, setting in the showcase, and selling within a couple hours.
It was insane for me. You were getting annoyed.
Well, what was funny was people were walking just directly up to Gary and being like, hey, are you buying? And I'm right there also not doing anything. Nobody at my table. First couple, because we've both been there where the other guy gets the stuff.
Yeah.
And we like to give each other a hard time. Somebody walks up to me, and there were a couple buys I got one day where you were like, dang, man, am I going to get any?
Yeah.
Like that 66 Koufax 7 came walking up.
I never even saw it.
Don't let me forget about the whole display conversation
we had. Yeah.
But Gary has some monsters walking up to him. So overall, the show was great. Traffic was not what was advertised. The foot traffic was not as advertised.
I'd say it was probably 10 to 12,000 people over the 2.5 days. Yeah. No, again, 25 to 30. That's still a lot of people.
Most places, that's great, but we're talking maybe a quarter mile of walking inside the mall.
It was like 500 tables. It was
500 tables. A lot of walking. Some of the social media people, like Jab's family, came walking by.
Yeah.
I think expecting people to know who he was. Nobody said a word. I also said no words.
No.
The guy's a bit of a grifter, I would have to say.
I would say his ex-wife and children would probably say the same things.
Some of his overpriced. Hey, if you have a Patreon set up and I'm not sure you're providing a service, that's.
Yeah.
Anyway, there were a lot of people there. More Clemente vintage than I've ever seen in my life at this
Pittsburgh,
show.
Pittsburgh, baby. Yeah.
Pirates fans were out in full force. So you set up Friday night, trade night, not knowing what to expect, expecting a lot of dealers to be actually trading. Trade night just means you set up your table early, from what I've learned.
Yeah.
It's there's
a
few people trading.
The show for me.
So we had a repack buyer come walking up to both of us.
A baseball only repack buyer, yeah, which is my ideal customer. Because I would say that outside of maybe just a little bit of walking that I did, I probably had not the highest end, but I had the best selection of $200 to $600 baseball stuff at the show that wasn't vintage.
First off, this buyer comes walking up, and my first thought was, I don't have enough Pokemon for this guy.
That's fair.
Like, not at all.
That was fair. He
my second thought bun. Was, I have a Max Schmeling out here that has some insignia, and this guy's definitely part of Antifa.
He was at Columbia before he came down.
My third thought was, oh, dang, he's already asked me to pull 4 cards out of the showcase, and he's not even flinching. And he liked the price I had him at. And I was like, dang, I just did $500 in like a 1-minute window with this guy. This is going to be great. Then he looks at Gary's, and his eyes just get huge because everything was right at the price point he was looking for with whatever product they sell.
Yeah.
So, again, if you don't know, I'll back up and then let you jump in. When we say repack product, okay, so the breakers, for the most part, if you join a break, it's a new product that's sealed. It's a, you know, the new Bowman, and then maybe they're doing a case of that. Or they do a mixer where there's 5 different products, and you get this team out of all these boxes, right? Well, as allocations became harder to get, Fanatics comes in, prices have gone up. Several breakers have gone away from the model of opening new cards, new wax, and they've gone to these sealed products where there's one card, it's a buy back. And so, for example, maybe it's a product that it's $150 for the buy-in. There's a case of these cards. Every case has one card that's worth $3,000. There's also cards in here that are worth $50 to $75. And then there's, on average, probably cards that are worth about $125. Okay? What that means is whoever makes this product has guaranteed margins in it, right? If I sell this at this price, we know there's X amount of value in cards, but it's a gamble for the buyer because they might hit the $3,000 card or maybe a $500 card, and everybody else is happy because they're not getting nothing. They're getting a $50 or $75 card, right? What that means is those repack buyers, when they come to a show like ours, a large show, they can literally pay 100% of comps and still make money because they're setting their prices before they send the cards out, not when they bring them in. So when they walk up to my table, they said, do you have any other vintage baseball over $100? Because I had several of those. And I had like a Schmidt that was $450, I think. A 7, SGC 7, which in that set is pretty high grade. That was too big for him. He's looking for stuff like $100 to $300. And Gary had a ton of it. So go ahead. Like, we just set up.
Yeah, 20 minutes. And matter of fact, I had walked over to get a lemonade. And I see you kind of wave at me, so I head back over. He's like, he had a few things he wanted to look at. Long story short, he just started picking my case. Took just about every baseball slab that I had that was between $50 and $500. A bunch of the raw, nicer Bowman stuff. Put a big stack together. We had about 5 cards out of the 30 or so he bought from me that he was like questioning my sticker on, and he was right on like four of the five. One of them I was dead on. He was like, oh, it looks like you're right on this one. This one is here. I was like, okay, well, let's figure out if we make a value that makes sense for us. Long story short, he ended up paying close to 90%. I did just right at $3,000, just within the first 20 minutes of the show, and it was off and running from there.
Yeah.
I ended up doing, before I bought anything, just under $7,000, and I probably spent $3,500, but I sold $2,500 of it back.
That was
the
weird part about the show.
It was, and the buys were when I, and the thing that's crazy about it, and I want to make this very clear, I was not trying to lowball anybody on anything. I was asking people what they wanted for stuff, and they gave me a number, and I would just give a little bit of a counter. I wasn't like, you want $500, I'll give you $150. Like, that wasn't how it went at all.
This show seemed like one where you had a lot of people that at one point had a collection, or they had nice stuff, and they just wanted cash to spend money at the show.
Yeah.
Which, that doesn't always go that way. Usually, like local smaller shows, it's the same. A lot of times it's kids or like 20-somethings that are coming up, and they're trying to flip, and they're being aggressive, and then you just want to be like, just buy your own table and set up. This didn't feel like that. I felt like there were a lot of people who were like, I understand you're a dealer. I understand you want margins. Here's the number I'm happy with. What do you think? Which was, I mean, there was probably a six-hour window where you and I, we couldn't buy enough stuff.
No, and the minute you bought it, you put it out and it was sold in 20 minutes. Yeah. Like, a guy walked up to my table with a gold Ohtani rookie, and it was clean.
Super clean.
Clean, and it measured properly.
And I had no one by me. He walked right by me, said, how you doing? Walked to Gary with that.
Yeah, and I bought it for $400. I sold it for $800.
Yeah, and he was thrilled.
Yeah, he was so happy. He came back with three more cards 20 minutes later and sold me $400 worth of cards for $200.
Yeah, and you told him like if this grades, it's a big card. He didn't care.
Yeah,
yeah.
It was just that kind of a show. I bought a Schmidt 1/1 auto that I still have that I don't care if I ever sell. I think I have it priced appropriately, but I don't care if it ever sells. Friday, a guy sold me a Bedard Young Guns and a Mahomes rated rookie, just a base Donruss rated rookie for $450.
That guy's notorious for ripping people off.
I sold the Bedard for $350 and the Mahomes for $250. Like, it was
he's just freeing up capital for bigger cards.
But when I say that's the kind of show this was, it was nuts. I bought two different Aiden Hutchinson rookies that were both monsters at 20% of value, and it's what the customer that sold it to me said they would pay wanted for it. It was just like, it was amazing. Like,
now the caveat is, if you're doing this and it's an actual kid, that's different.
No, I'm not doing this. No, if a little kid comes up.
If a kid comes up and is like, I don't know, $10, you're like, this is worth $90.
Well, I always try. I saw you do it a couple times. I did it with a graded Lynn Swann rookie. A kid was a Steelers fan. He really wanted it. It wasn't a super expensive. It's a $25 card, not a big card. I said, I can do $20 on it for you. And he pulls all of his money out of his pocket. Thing. And it's just a bunch of
maybe
ones on
$2.37.
It was probably $8 or $9. He was like, oh, I just don't have enough. And I went, buddy, I tell you what, put that money back in your pocket. Here you go. Gave him the card. Another kid brought three cards to me to trade, and they were all $5 to $8 a piece. And he was looking at three cards in my $2 box. Mm-hmm. And he was like, would you trade these for these? I was like, well, how about this? I'll give you $10 too. Like, I'm never going to but if you're a 40-year-old man and you walk up to me with something and I ask you how much you want for it and you give me a number and that number is amazing, I'm going to say yes, thank you.
Yeah. I did figure out how to hack the trade up challenge.
Oh, you did? It was pretty funny.
You were laughing about this. So this kid comes walking up. He's like, I was just over at that table doing this trade-up challenge. They're always there with five other kids, right?
Hate it. I hate it so much.
He's like, here's what he told me. He told me it's worth $10. I look at it. I said, where'd you get this? He pointed out. It was a no-name Silver Prism rookie basketball. This is a $1 card. It's probably worth $3. You'll be lucky to get a dollar out of it. I said, well, buddy, I'm going to tell you something. Somebody lied to you. And I pulled out a card that was worth $10. I said, hey, these three cards are worth $10. Here's what I'm going to do. I'll make the trade for you. But here's the deal. You tell all your friends. Nobody comes back the rest of the weekend. Ask them for a trade-up challenge deal. Don't tell them that this guy gives deals, blah, blah. I'm doing this because you got screwed over. Don't come back.
Yeah, this is it.
So he's taking the card and said, what's the rule? He said, don't come back.
Yeah.
There you go, buddy. I can't remember what a game. It was like a $10 card. But he was, he probably did that 50 times, rinse and repeat. He may have made more than us. But But yeah, the show was like busy like that. I had a large consignment for the show. I think I mentioned it last week that I'm moving a really cool boxing collection that had some other vintage in it. One of the cards that sold for me was the 35 Babe Ruth Max Schmeling card out of a Bulgarian cigarette card set. Did that one, moved a few others. The boxing collection is actually pretty rare. The handful of people that knew boxing walked up and were like, wow, this is some awesome stuff. It's not going to be easy for me to sell it. You know, I've got a cash at 66 Cassius Clay that's probably worth about $5,000. It's not going to be easy to sell that card. It's going to be hard.
No, it's going to take time.
It'll take some time. Tyson, Sonny Liston, some of the other bunch of 48.
It's a great
lead
card for the National if it doesn't sell before then.
Yeah. It could take stuff up for that, work some stuff out. So, but anyway. Overall, a very pleasant experience. Traffic could have been a little bit better. Gary's never allowed to pick our hotel again.
Was it clean?
It had been cleaned.
Was it clean?
The air quality would be the one thing
I can't speak to the air quality, but the
room
was clean.
Do you remember, if you're the age of at least my age, I'm going to be 39 this year. You remember how every public place just had a coat of cigarette smoke on it? No matter where you went, because there was smoking and non everywhere. It was a non-smoking room that smelled like that. Somebody just ripped a whole carton in there.
Well, here's the deal. You are welcome to pick out our hotel rooms anytime you want to. I will pay half of $66 a night because that's what I can get a hotel room
Oh, I'm not
for.
Staying with you. That ship has sailed.
I just sleep there and take a shower there. I don't care.
Except
about
we're so old that we're like, oh, there's a casino 20 minutes down the road. Oh, I bet there's some fun stuff to do. You want to go to the Pirates game? Guess what we did both nights to get back?
Ordered DoorDash and sat
6:30 p.m. We're back. We're like, you just order food and eat in bed?
It was – that show is mentally
point of clarity.
Though.
Point of clarity. We weren't eating in the same bed.
No.
We were in separate beds.
Yeah, because you wouldn't let me get a king room.
He wanted a king room, and it was
cheaper.
It's against the rules.
yeah, it was – the show out there, most shows, if you go to a show, if you're just somebody who shows up at a show, you may not understand this. Most shows are scheduled from 9 to 3 or 10 to 3. And dealers are usually there 7:30 to 8, but we're done by 3 o'clock. This show on Friday was 3 to 7 and Saturday 8 to 6 and Sunday 8 to 3. It's a lot. Yeah. It was work. It was fun, and I drank a lot of lemonade. First off,
their food court only has a deli and then a candy shop that made fresh
food. When you say
lemonade.
A deli, I mean a legit, like, do you want a pound of roast beef? Yes, we have that.
Yeah.
Deli.
Although you were insulted by their $8 ham salad sandwich.
That's insane. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Also, while we're finishing up there, and this is not a paid advertisement, although if you're listening, folks, and you want to shout us out and give us a sponsorship, we will shout you out all the time. You and I both picked up something that we have looked at here and there, but
we do need to bug them.
Actually set up at the show, and they make a great product.
Yeah.
Gladiator bags. It's Quantum Sports is the manufacturer, but they have multiple different card carrying accoutrement. In my opinion, they're way more functional than a Zion case. So you and I both got backpacks, but there were different styles. You got the one that holds more slabs.
Yep.
And I got the one that is kind of convertible. So it has a main pocket for slabs, and then it also has a secondary pocket with another bag that slides out of it that's smaller that you can also just carry.
About the size of like a golf shoe bag.
Yeah. And that's what I took with me today to Xenia because I knew I was going to be primarily buying. I knew I was not targeting loads and loads of low-end stuff. I was really targeting, you know, spending a couple thousand dollars on mid-range stuff. I spent half of what I wanted to spend, which was another disappointment, but I've got some nice stuff. That Ichiro's nice.
Yeah, but give it to me.
but yeah, shout out to Quantum Sports for making a really, really great product. If you're looking for something to carry your cards in that's very looks good and has a lot of functionality. The bag I got has a cell phone charging port built into it, like all kinds of cool stuff. And it wasn't crazy expensive. I think I paid $125 for it, which is less than a Zion case.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We should make them pay us for that, but we didn't. There was one particular exchange I think we need to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
So as that repacker is over there at my table first, I'm in the middle of a deal. Common courtesy is don't interrupt the deal that's happening unless like somebody's blocking a card and you want to see it. That happens, especially with everybody having these bags. They'll set it on the showcase. This guy comes walking up. Clearly, he flips sneakers. He's too cool for everybody there. He, in the middle of the deal, is like, hey, can you let me see that Jordan? It's a PSA 10, early 90s, like 92 or 93 or 93, 94, Flair Ultra. But it was a 10, Jordan, PSA 10. Picks it. I was like, I guess. Like, I'm clearly annoyed that he's being rude. Hand him the card. Then he starts inspecting it. Now, mind you, help me understand what could possibly need to be inspected when it is already a PSA 10.
He is getting ready to beat you down on the price on it. That is what's happening.
Going to look at a PSA 10 and see, can I find a flaw on this card and say, well, whenever I sell it, somebody's going to say.
And as you tell the rest of this story, audience, as the rest of the story unfolds, understand one key thing. I saw this happen.
Yeah.
Okay, so now go ahead with the story.
Yeah, so he looks it over. I'm not talking to him because I'm in a conversation with somebody spending money. Somebody spending like $500. I'm paying attention, right? You pull multiple cards out of the showcase. I'm going to spend time with you, right? This guy is, he goes, man, I'm going to have to pass on that one. All right, man. Cool. Put it back. Now Gary's in the middle of his deal. The guy's moved over. It's been a minute or two. And then he just starts asking to pull. Did he pull cards out? No. He's just looking. I'll let you take it from here.
No, yeah. So he actually did. He said, can I take a look at this and this? And the two cards he wanted to take a look at were a PSA 9 Jordan Love Donruss rated rookie silver die cut to 75. And it's actually a card that I think is worth resubbing. I can't anymore because it's gone now. Not to this dude. And then a Jaxon Smith-Njigba Razzle Dazzle rookie PSA 9 case hit. And he kind of does the same thing. I'm dealing with this other guy. He's got a massive stack of cards. He's not blinking at prices.
By the way, this guy is another dealer set up at the show.
This isn't a random person.
He's
got a dealer tag, the whole nine yards. And he gets his phone out immediately and starts doing his thing. And it's fine. Whatever. I've got this stuff priced. It was priced at the end of football season. So I know I'm a little high on it because we're in the off season, but I don't care because, especially on the Jordan Love, like, I don't care. If you don't want to pay for it now, you can pay for it in July when it's worth more than what I have it at right now. And he says, and I'll be the first to admit that I may have put my own perceptions into the way I read his tone, but he looks at him and looks at me and he's like, hey man, you think you are willing to give a little discount off of current comps on these? And my response was, and I thought it was a very measured and reasonable response. Jason says I was a little aggressive with it, but I don't think I was.
Just say it. Just say exactly.
I said, no. I mean, I'm not looking to give them away at current pricing, like out of season or off season pricing. I'm not looking to give them away for off season pricing.
To which the guy says,
the guy goes, well, I wasn't asking you to give them away. I was like, no.
Then he said, what?
You kind of were. And then he goes, you just need to change the way you talk to people and deliver things to
people.
He
looked over his glasses and said, you need to change your approach, man.
And I went.
I was like, oh, no. We're going to get kicked out of this.
I was like, buddy, I think I'm good. I didn't say that you would want me to give them away, but I'm very clear that I'm not selling them to you for 60% of current comps.
Under off-season comps.
And if that's a problem for you, I ain't the guy for you.
Then he stomps off and keeps yelling stuff.
He's saying stuff as he's walking away. And, of course, you know me. I'm going to keep barking, too. And the poor guy who ended up spending $3,000 with me was just like, that dude was an asshole.
Yeah.
What was that guy's problem?
Yeah.
And I went, that guy's problem was very simple. He's used to pushing people around.
Yep.
And when he ran into somebody he couldn't push around, he had no idea how to react to it.
Yeah, so I'll say, Gary did say that. Here's how he said it. Okay, so because I think that it plays context. He's 100% right. Him and Gary are the same. They're used to being, like, very blunt. That's the reality.
I don't mind somebody being blunt back. But this guy minded it.
You're not intentionally trying to be rude. There's a difference.
No,
he doesn't care.
Yeah.
And he says that, and Gary goes, well, I'm not trying to give it away. That was his immediate response.
Yeah.
Most dealers would say, what do you mean? Or what does that mean?
I already knew what he meant.
I'm going to make him sound like an idiot.
Yeah.
Just like, I'm going to save myself 10 more seconds.
Exactly. I don't need to have more conversations. I already know what this guy's goal is.
And the guy kept coming by.
It's not going to happen.
The whole weekend, just walking by, making faces like there's beef. I was like, I don't think you want to play this game.
Well, the best part about it was very shortly after that, somebody walked by my showcase. I think I had $150 on the Jordan Love. And it probably comps at 120 right now.
Yeah.
And a guy comes up to the table and he goes, would you take 130 for that? Yep.
Yep.
Sold. Done. Like,
because it's right back to 150 to 175 in a few months.
It was not a card I was worried about selling. Yeah. Like, and here's a little tip. If you're going to a show and you're trying to buy stuff cheap, there's nothing wrong with that. I go to shows and try to buy stuff cheap all the time. Don't go try to pick the hottest, most popular stuff that's going to fly up that a dealer knows is going to fly up. It's not going to go well for you.
Yeah, I agree.
That was two
pickups.
One. From the show?
Yeah. I'll give you three if you need them.
My favorites were probably the Schmidt 1-of-1 auto that I still have, that gold Ohtani, and the Aiden Hutchinson Contenders Cracked Ice Horizontal Helmet Variation on-card auto number to 22. That sold already. So... that sold and the Ohtani sold. I still have the Schmidt. So those were my three favorite pickups, although I had so many that it was mind-numbing. It's just as fast as I was buying it, it was selling.
Yeah. Let's see. The 66 Koufax in a SGC 7 was a really pretty card. That might have been the best color I've seen on that set. The Frank Robinson rookie that showed up 30 minutes before the show was over.
Yeah.
And that guy offered me a margin on that card, which I don't know if maybe it's because we're in Pittsburgh, but
that's
Frank,
who I got the Schmidt from.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause I saw the vintage and I went, this is more.
You're right. You
mine.
Did throw me a bone. I did. I appreciate that. I'm finding myself sinking into vintage only because of how they're performing at shows.
And talk about your displays now, because you told me not to let you forget. And this is related to it.
My displays. Oh, I will. Yeah. I will. All right. Second card. Honestly, I really like this Bobby Witt Bowman Chrome Sapphire Aqua rookie. It's in a PSA 10. Very pretty card.
Number to 125, right?
Yeah. And then third card.
The Brady's really nice too.
The Brady. What is that? 07 or 08?
07.
08. 08.
Yeah, blue.
Brady Topps Chrome Blue PSA 9. Blue refractor. Gorgeous. Just a gorgeous card. I don't care if that sells. The number I have on is going to be very top of comps, and I'll keep it if I need to. But here's an interesting thing that happened. As I was buying more vintage because it was flipping more, the more vintage I put in my showcase, the more people that walked past. I got less foot traffic because there's shows you go to that are just vintage heavy, and if you're looking for anything but that, you're like, oh, this is all that's going to be. There's also a stereotype with vintage dealers. They're going to break out the Beckett. They're going to throw numbers out there that are not relevant to the current market. They have a tendency to be a little bit grumpy, blah, blah, blah. The first day I realized that Saturday I realized I had a lot of vintage in and got less foot traffic. I mixed it up, threw some vintage in my boxes, and then had some more modern out, and I'll be darned if I didn't get more foot traffic the next day. So it was interesting that if you put too much of that out, it just kind of puts you in a corner. And if you're doing all vintage, then that's fine. Roll with it. But that's a tough game because those comps, there's a 30% spread on a lot of that. Like, it can be liquid, but you're going to find...
Because it all depends on how it presents.
Yeah.
A PSA 6 and a PSA 3, I have seen 3s outsell the 6 because the color and centering are better on the 3.
Well, and the other thing you run into is modern collectors are just looking, is this going to 9 or better? If we're being honest. Like,
yeah.
Is it have a chance at a 10 or a 9? Nobody's thinking about a 4 or 5 or 6. And vintage, that's a difference of maybe like 30, 40% in value. That's
sometimes
a lot.
It's a difference of...
The difference of a 3 to a 7?
300% value.
Well, on really, really collectible stuff. Yeah, but, you know, let's say like that Sandy Koufax, right? So I've got one that, you know, I've sold a lot of that. That 66 Koufax, I've sold several of at this point. 7's high grade. 7 is the number I notice. 6 and higher, but 7 especially, you have their attention. And you have a little bit of authority on the pricing. But you get lower, man, it doesn't matter that it's slabbed in a 5. They're going to pick that apart. And they're not wrong. Like, you learn a ton. Right. So I'm kind of diving into that because I'm enjoying vintage baseball. There's less volatility, but there's different challenges with it. But I've really enjoyed doing that. And then just the conversation I have with some of my regular buyers that are heavy vintage buyers and collectors. Those would be my three favorites. It's interesting what happens to showcase that. Before we finish up today, let's talk Bowman a little bit. All right.
Yeah, 2024 Bowman came out this week.
Yep, 2024 Bowman comes out. You opened a case of blasters. I only opened four boxes, I think it was. Four blasters. I got in a couple breaks. I did hit a Max Clark Golden Nugget die cut. What's it called? Prospector's Gold or Gold Nugget or whatever. That's a decent card. I hit a Wyatt Langford Rising Infernos to 150 Mini Diamond. No big autos, no big firsts, no big color. What about you?
So I thought that my case was that I ripped was very similar to the cases I've ripped in past years at Bowman. I hit a yellow chrome auto, which is pretty normal. It wasn't of a big name guy. Last year it happened to be Lázaro Montes, so it was a big card. This is like a $100 card. I did hit a Paul Skeens auto, which is a couple hundred bucks. And then again, the benefit to ripping Bowman by the case in retail is the sheer amount of inserts and first chromes that you get. And I've already run a claim sale on Facebook with this stuff, just the $2, $3, $4, and $5 cards and a few random bigger cards. I didn't put everything out. I've already recouped half my cost of the case, and I still have piles and piles of this stuff that will continue to make money over time. So again, Bowman's the long game unless you get super, super lucky. If you're
willing to grind, the long game means you're going to grind out a bunch of $1 and $2 cards.
Yes.
The difference is Top Series 1, it's like, what the $1 and $2 card, you're almost past your window of selling this.
You already are past your window.
Bowman holds on because these guys go from 1A to 2A, 2A to 3A.
You got a 3-year window, sometimes longer.
Yeah. So, you know, you will get that back. It's really good dollar box stuff. That's the other thing I didn't talk about. Dollar box. Amazing thing happens. For those of you that keep several $1 and $2 boxes, a reminder, once you've rinsed and repeated several times, your $1 stuff probably sucks. So
right, refresh.
The last day of the PA show that we did, I put all of my $2 and $1 boxes on a $1 sale, and I won't be done. I'd be darned if I didn't sell probably $200-$300 worth of those cards, at a buck a piece. And here's the funny thing: they now were buying stuff out of the $1 box at a dollar because some of the $2 value was there. So, quick reminder to you: the stuff that I ripped, nothing huge. A few $5 to $10 cards, nothing big. I'm excited about the retrofractors. I've already seen a Bob Gibson gold.
I want a Bob Gibson more than I want the Pete Rose, to be perfectly honest with you.
Well, here's the big thing, and nobody wants to talk about it, but the fact that Pete Rose is in a licensed uniform with an autograph, tell me the last time that's happened.
1989.
So,
well, now he didn't even have autographs in 1989.
That's what I'm saying. And so the problem is he's sitting at the local casino in Vegas. My wife's calling. Hold on. I got to tell her we're recording.
With you, though. People are going to want the licensed autograph of Pete Rose because it's the first one ever in a licensed product. But again, Pete Rose autographs are cheap. Like, you can go buy a Pete Rose autograph ball certed for $40. So I think, and the one of one has already been pulled. The super has already been pulled. It was pulled on release day. So the biggest, it would be cool to have. The refractors would be cool to have. They'll have some value. But I would rather personally have the Gibson if it was me. But, you know, each to their own.
Yeah, so these retrofractors are redemptions. Which
that not was all just, of them.
Well, the Pete Rose was, the which one was of surprising. One was. Which was my text to you said, what is, oh, how in the hell is there a product that Pete Rose hasn't signed?
Right.
Because he's known for just over signing
everything. You got $5, he'll sign for you.
Yeah. So that was a little bit surprising to me. I do like those cards. The smart play on those is to wait a little bit and then buy them. They're not going to be cheap then, but they'll be cheaper. But once again, a fun product. It's one I'll pick up on the shelves and not feel like I'm losing because I know I'm going to get half of it back in dollar cards when I set up. But yeah, it's been a fun one to see. That's one of the few I also watch breaks on. You learn a lot about, if you get into a room where somebody knows their prospects, they'll start talking because their job obviously is any hit, they want it to be like a big deal, right? When you get into one where people actually know the players, you learn a ton about the current market.
And the flip side of that is when you get into a break where it's obvious that somebody's just breaking a product because it's in front of them, they can't pronounce the prospects' names. They don't know who guys are. It infuriates me.
Yeah.
It infuriates me. I usually will just not watch the break, even if I'm in it, and I'll wait till they post it, and then I'll go watch the last 30 seconds.
You got to remember, 80% of these guys breaking don't, especially on the larger platforms, they don't own it. They're getting paid $20 an hour. They're basketball, football guys. Prospecting is like the cousin to vintage collecting. Like it is a little more niche. It is people that...
Are you calling me a dork?
Yes.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, it is. You have to kind of be a nerd about what's happening in it. I've done top 100 lists with you and followed up, and then I don't check back in on that typically. Like, you are somebody that's checking on that on a regular, if not daily, at least multiple times a week, seeing how people are doing in the farm systems, which I don't care that much.
Fair enough.
But I love... the few guys that I do watch and diving into, it's fun to see who might pop on that. What else we got? We got anything else? I think that about runs us through it. Oh, the spotlight insert we were going to talk about as well.
Yeah, they made it at more than case hit. It's like one every 2 to 2.5 cases.
Visually, that card last year looked like it should have been a big hit.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this would be a cool set to build. And then you realize they're all like $2. Well, not anymore.
No.
This also means you might catch somebody slipping.
Yeah.
You catch somebody slipping on that one, snag them up. That set will be a really, really cool modern set to build. If you can build that set, there'll be some expensive ones in there, real, real, real expensive, but that would be a really cool completed set.
Yeah.
So how many players are in that? Do you know?
I want to say it's 20.
Okay.
Most of the insert sets this year.
So it's
going to
be very expensive.
Yeah.
But that would be a cool one. That would be a cool one to do. So hopefully Gary and I will have some purchases on the 5K challenge coming up.
Yeah, I'm hoping to. It's just finding the right card.
If it don't make dollars, then it don't make sense.
Right.
You like that?
Yeah.
I came up with that.
Is that fresh?
I'm the first one to ever say that. Can I tell people about the hoodie shorts story?
Sure.
You ever heard this one? A buddy we used to work with, shout out to Dave.
Oh.
You still work with him, I don't. He's just brilliant in the moment with strangers. I don't know how else to say that. Like, he meets somebody new and he can have fun. And if somebody's crazy, he has a good time with
it. What you're saying is if he was so inclined, he'd be an amazing serial killer.
Oh, the best.
Yeah. Okay.
He'd be the best. I'd let him eat my guts. You know what I mean? Like, he'd be so good. I'd be like, I'm impressed. Cut me open. But there, he's working at this house and this guy has a hoodie and shorts on. It's like 60 degrees. And he's like, man, isn't this great weather for that? It's like 60 degrees, breezy, it's perfect hoodie and shorts weather. He said, what the hell did you just say? He said, you know, it's like perfect hoodie and shorts weather. Honey, get here. Honey, come here. Dude calls his wife out to the garage to talk to him. Tell him what you just said. I was just saying, like, with this weather, it's like perfect hoodie and shorts weather. Honey, tell him who came up with that. And he said, what do you mean come up with it? And the wife goes, he came up with that, hoodie and shorts weather. These people believed that he invented hoodie and shorts, and it went viral. And he was getting credit for it in that moment. People are morons. This has been the Ball Card Show, the sports podcast.
For the sports collector.
Bye now.
Peace.